if it's an adversarial threat, you want to know what is the direction that that boat is going. And so by having our ability to be able to revisit things multiple times, we can actually start to do things in prediction, which is, we think it's going here, take the image of that spot the next time. This is an industry, if you think about geospatial information, or you think about any information that we've been kind of fusing together, the amount of human element to try and drive that has been tremendous. So you can actually pick up on things like human trafficking. Well, we'd rather be on the side of working with governments on stopping human trafficking, or work with the international community to stop drug trade. But the other thing I'm actually really proud of is the fact that I've had tremendous mentors from inside the company who have taught me more about this industry than I can shake a stick at.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs and business leaders. My guest today for this episode is Dan Smoot, CEO of Vantor, a Colorado-based global company forging the new frontier in spatial intelligence. And what is spatial intelligence? I had to look that up, actually separate from your website. I had to look it up. Basically, it's the advanced capability to integrate and analyze data from space, air, and ground sensors to deliver real-time insights. Today, that is a massive amount of data being collected and fused instantly to solve big problems and make critical decisions, everything from where to plant crops to where to plant troops, for example. And we're going to talk with Vantor about all of that, and with Dan. By the way, Vantor is a new name for a company you may have known as Maxar, and before that as Digital Globe. So with all that, Dan, welcome to ProCo 360.
Well, thanks for having me today. It's wonderful to be here.
Good. And I gave a quick overview of Vantor, but I'm sure you can give us a better one, right?
That was a mouthful, by the way, from a marketing perspective, so I think we have to look at our taglines. If you think about Vantor, formerly known as Maxar, a lot of people have, and even knew Digital Globe before that, we are the largest, what we call electro-optical imaging provider in the world.
There's the mouthful. Electro-optical
imaging. Yeah. Yes. And basically what that is they're satellites that have the capability to take a very exquisite imagery of the Earth. And to your point, everything from what's going on in crops to how you build maps. And it's at a level of detail where you can actually see fine lines, like lines in parking lots and building corners. And the reason this is important is, as you think about us mapping the entire world in 2D, we've actually mapped 80% of the world in 3D. So, and that's pretty much the areas where, people live.
Yeah. So, but you can extrapolate from, you think of an image and it's a 2D image, you essentially infer 3D through our own mental calculation or whatever, but you're doing more than inferring 3D.
Correct. We're actually creating the 3D imagery. And you do that by just basically layering on 2D. And when you've had as many revisits as we do, which we can hit same locations every day at a very exquisite level 15 times, wow, you can actually really replicate and build out that 3D modeling. And that really has led us into an ability to drive lots of ground-based applications, and we can talk through those. But that's the beauty of what we've been doing for almost 20 years, which is really just mapping this world, and it serves multiple industries.
Well, I am really curious about this idea of taking multiple images from the same, roughly the same spot, and creating a 3D model out of it. So I'm just thinking, like, how do you do that?
It's a great science behind it. And I actually have a lot of engineers, and that split their time between, of course, here in, Westminster, where we're based, as well as in Sweden, for a company called Vricon, who actually came up with this methodology. And in realistically, what you are doing is you're taking 3D or 2D digital pairs and just in mapping them on top of each other.
And does the angle change slightly enough to give you that perspective so that when you stack this slight difference in angle, now you're creating 3D?
Correct. And you're just doing this over and over and over again. And now what's beautiful about it is if there's a change, like a building changes, a road changes, the landscape changes, which we do see can happen, in many different parts of the world. Yeah. Now all we have to do is just update it, which we can do rapidly. And now you're seeing the ability to have insights like you've never been able to see before, which is we can actually see just things that are changing. We don't have to really remap everything anymore.
So what's an example that I could relate to?
So take you, if you're a development in a city And you're seeing there are cities around the world that are doing rapid development right now. And they're trying to manage what's going on in that base level map in a city. We can actually update just based on the change that's going on in that city. So we can actually see what we call building road changes. And just update map makers like an Apple, who is a big user of ours. And so they no longer have to go and refresh everything. They can actually just do things based on the dynamics of the change on the ground. And if you can imagine, there's other, you know, uses for this, which is like object detection. So if you want to understand a very exquisite object like a boat or maybe a rail car or other things that can be on the ground, you may have needs for the intel and defense industry, which would be monitoring lots of very important information that would help, you know, the troops on the ground.
So how is this different? I know I just can't get let go of this because I'm just so – how is this different from just having a satellite, you know, look and see a boat, you know, and say, there it is?
Well, you know, it's one thing to be able to pick up an image and to see something one time. Is what you're trying to do is understand what's happening in the amount of change because things are moving all over the place.
Yeah.
So if it's an adversarial threat, you want to know what is the direction that that boat is going. And so by having our ability to be able to revisit things multiple times, we can actually start to do things in prediction, which is we think it's going here, take the image of that spot the next time, and we can pick it up. Where it also becomes really important, where 3D plays a very important, is applications like autonomy. So drones run an autonomous capability. And if you can imagine that, you know, the defense industry is really interested in autonomous drones.
Yes.
But one of the reasons they're really focused on that 3D landscape that we just talked about is because GPS oftentimes can get denied. There's electronic warfare that can actually knock out the ability for a drone to fly.
Yeah.
By having an autonomous capability that's 3D landscape doesn't change much. And this may be after an event. You can actually fly it much more precisely on 3D landscape navigation than you can from GPS.
Wow. All right. Now, I was intrigued by a term on your website. It says task our constellation. So does that mean like basically put us to work with our satellites?
Yes.
Cool. All right.
You can actually go in and tell us where you'd like to task and we'll take an image of it.
Nice. And how long, I mean, how many satellites do you have up there now?
We have 10 satellites.
And so how, if I want you to come by and take a picture of my house, how long do I have to wait?
Depends.
Yeah. Depends on what the kind of, where everything is.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's not cloudy.
That too. Yeah.
And it depends on where you are in the world. You can imagine there are certain parts of the world that are very busy, where we have lots of requests to be taking imagery. But you know, if it's here in Colorado, probably fairly quickly. We have a lot of requests that we get. We can actually turn them in, you know, a couple days. As a matter of fact, we've actually designed the capability with our latency. In certain parts of the world, we can do things in 11 minutes.
Specific, I mean, depending on what's going on and who your customer is, you can position your satellites to deliver faster results?
Not just position the satellite to take the task, but we can actually give it the command, take the task, develop the image and give it to them in a very short period of time.
Meaning what's very short?
Like it's between about 15 minutes.
Wow. That's cool. All right.
In certain parts of the world.
Yes. So I want to dig into a bunch of specific examples and because I really want to paint a picture of the wonderful work that you're doing at Vantor. And so your website also says, if you're monitoring adversarial activity, securing your borders, or tracking illicit activity, timing and fine detail are everything. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about all of those. So what's an example of like how you work with the government, for example, on defense for the United States?
Well, first off, we're one of the largest contractors to do what we call foundational mapping. And if you really think about any kind of movement from a government perspective, foundational mapping is actually critically important. And a lot of people are sitting there thinking, oh, maps.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
It's the ability to actually deliver and distribute, you know, the digital maps of the world. And so that's really important. It's not just, by the way, important from a defense perspective. It's actually important for civilian perspectives as well. But, you know, specifically in defense, what our government and other governments care about is really understanding really what's changing on the landscape on the ground. That's why they are constantly remapping the world to understand what has moved, what has changed, and because, you know, the geography moves and changes, but also buildings and all the other things that go with it, roads, that happen because you do a lot of planning from that perspective. Then on top of it, they're starting to use more of these capabilities to understand, like I said, object detection. They really want to understand, like we had run a program called LUNO, with the U.S. government, which is really an object detection capability for us to look and site monitor certain areas in the world and see what's moving around in them. So it could be, you know, ships like I talked about. It could be rail cars, airplanes, you know, certain types of vehicles.
Anything.
Yeah. And so you're using that because we're revisiting so often that now what we're taking is, you know, our AI ML capabilities, and we're starting to teach our data what things are on the ground. And so the models are becoming faster and faster to be able to give them information about change.
And I suppose as you train the AI, it can start to alert you on things that you ask it for.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the intent.
Cool. All right. What about commercial applications?
Oh, tons of commercial applications.
Yeah, there have to be a zillion. But like what's one that makes you, that when you tell people, they're like, oh, that's cool.
Well, I think everybody probably realizes that they use us all the time and don't even know that they use us all the time. So if you think about a lot of consumer mapping technologies out there, and I mentioned one by brand, there are multiple companies that do kind of mapping to give a consumer capability, you know, on your mobile devices and stuff. Well, we've got one also that uses that for, you know, navigations on their cars. There are many automotive manufacturers, and there are many companies that actually build those capabilities for automotive manufacturers. So you might be riding on maps that we've created.
Ah, so and, they're buying them from you and creating this these software mapping programs.
Correct.
But you're the one creating the original content.
We create the content, and then they curate it back into what they want it to be from a commercial perspective. One of the funnest ones, though, is there's a company that actually makes a wrist device. I can't give that brand out name, but you guys can figure it out. But you might be using it for golfing and hunting and doing all these things. That content that we deliver to them on a regular basis is updated to your mobile, your wrist device, and you might be playing golf.
Yes, I was going to say, could you, if the satellite were positioned correctly, could you find my lost golf ball?
We're not quite, not that quite exclusive.
But, not quite there.
But we could tell you where you should hit it.
Oh, okay. Yes, I know. Yes, yeah. What about, okay, I asked you about government, I asked you about commercial. Like, what's an example of something else that just is fun to talk about that you're delivering content to enable?
I think the funnest one that's growing really fast is actually what we call non-Earth imaging.
So space.
Space.
Yeah.
So, you know, people have seen recently our ability to kind of turn our satellites sideways and start to take imaging of other satellites. And some of the ones that have been really interesting to watch is not just the International Space Station, but also the Chinese Space Station. We've been monitoring lots of launches that have been going up with new or lower Earth orbit capabilities. We've actually found people's satellites that had launched, maybe start tumbling. They can't figure out how to commission it, which means basically start them up and get them working.
Yeah.
And we've been able to find them, and we can be able to tell those companies it's tumbling or the angle's wrong. Again, because our imagery is so exquisite, we actually can see the fine detail on those satellites from, you know, 30, 40, 50, 100 kilometers away.
Wow.
And if you just get it timed right, then we can actually, you know, work with both commercial companies, but, you know, the international government who are very interested in what's being launched in the world, what's on orbit.
And so does that mean if you see a tumbling satellite, you contact the company or the country, and you say, okay, either you pay us for the data or...
they'll generally call us first.
They will.
they'll tell us that they have the problem. We generally don't go searching for problems because that is truly a needle in a haystack.
I would think so. Yes.
All so, right. But they'll call us and they'll pay for us to find it. Most of the time it's more observation. You know, there's lots of things tracking satellites, but there's a lot of blind areas where radar doesn't pick up things. And so... we'll get contracted to find out, you know, what's happening in these blind areas where satellites are flying. Satellites are flying closer together. You know, people are observing each other a lot more.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of curiosity about what's going on orbit now.
So this like space reward, like you could be like a bounty hunter for satellites, for lost and tumbling satellites. So, all right. Your website talks a lot about spatial data. Is that what you've been describing? You know, or what is spatial data?
Spatial data is actually broader than just geospatial intel that we've been doing traditionally. If you really think about it, we're now incorporating different types of data into a lot of our solutions. So I was just talking about what we were talking about, that object detection or site monitoring. That's a product called Sentry from us. So spatial data is actually looking at both what's space data, ground data, and even aerial data from their drones. So when I talked about that capability for the autonomous capability on drones, that's called Raptor in our product line. That actually can incorporate the camera data from Ariel that it's picking up as it's flying. We can incorporate that into our space data. So spatial data is the ability to actually incorporate multi-sources and fuse it together.
So do you have to pay or you contract for those other sources of data, or you have partnerships where you share? How does that work?
We do have a virtual constellation that we do share data from other orbital providers. When we do work with the drone manufacturers, we do look at how we incorporate their data, and we're now looking at other ground sources now. And so that fusion of that data is incredibly important. Now, I'm going to probably use a technical term that's really important, but it's really important in our industry, but not everybody understands. You literally have to do what's called geo-registration, because if you want a clean image of the world and you're using multiple sources of data, they all have to be saying the same thing. And so we literally have to have that geo-registration capability to be able to map all of the different types of data sources
together.
So you're
calibrating to a point or 2 points?
Yeah, we're calibrating points on the ground, and then we're making sure that they can all sync up. That's really important if you're doing critical missions in the government, of course. If you're actually doing map making, you need to understand that that line in that data is actually a street, or, you know, is it a pipeline, or what is it? But if you're not geo-registered, it may just look like an error in it. So these capabilities are pretty complex, but it's something that we at Vantor take, you know, massive amount of pride in regards to our ground solution capabilities, that we can actually fuse all of this data together now and really simplify it for governments and commercial companies.
I would think that you can train those maps and those data to recognize the difference between, you know, a road and a trench, or a road and, I mean, you know, a car and a something else. I mean, so do you, I mean, can you deliver content that's labeled?
Yes.
That's cool.
We have a pretty large labeling group right now.
Really?
Well, if you think about it, you know, everybody talks about AI right now, but AI is only as good as the data it's learning off of. So if you have poor modeling, it'll never pick up on what the models are. And so we do a lot of teaching right now to make sure that we can actually develop this data so it's really effective for our customers to use.
Yeah, that's good. And I want to talk about that, and I want to shift from this notion of raw data collection to applied data. And I want to dig into it a lot. But first, before I forget, I want to thank sponsors. Quick break here. You're listening to ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 5 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the podcast for people who love Colorado and love the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Dan Smoot, CEO of Vantor. I want to thank our sponsors. First, Via Technologies. Via Technologies focuses on really smart clients who can collaborate with Via to strategically integrate web design and digital marketing and achieve growth targets. Also, Denver Ventures, we partner with them to feature great Colorado companies. A lot of past guests on ProCo 360 are Denver Ventures portfolio companies, and those episodes are great ones. Hey, one more mention. I'm a CU Business School alum, and I'm happy that ProCo 360 is partnering with the Leeds Business School at CU Boulder to reach each other's audiences. On the Leeds Business Insights podcast, you'll get fresh insights from conversations with professors, alumni, and thought leaders who share lessons from their successes in Colorado and beyond. So listen to Leeds Business Insights on your favorite podcast platform. All right. Now, going to switch back, because this is where we really dig into this whole idea of raw data versus applied data. And so talk about that.
One of the most complex, probably part of the business development we've been doing, right? Which is, if you think about historically how we've been actually distributing imagery, it's been raw data. And we've actually looked at a lot of our governments, a lot of our, you know, industry providers to be able to curate that data into a product and outcome. But if you think about how to become more efficient, especially in the government perspective, it's how do you actually create products that come out of that data so it's applied into certain types of applications. I talked about Raptor, which is people, you know, they don't want to have to curate the data and understand what the landscape's doing. They want the data, they want the landscape to be built. And so what we've been doing is building these, you know, these products, you know, by synthesizing the data into a much more effective application. If you even think about our Sentry product, which is this object detection or site monitoring capability, people don't want to sit there and parse through imagery after imagery after imagery. That's a huge human labor aspect of How do you actually parse the raw data? What they want to know is, give me an alert of something that has changed. And then let me deal with it. We don't even have to understand what that issue is. But if we can actually monitor change on the ground because we can actually layer over the raw data on top of each other, so suddenly you're actually giving something back, you know, that can pay, make people much more effective. You can apply that over and over and over again. Think about industry, the energy industry and like around petrochemical. They can't monitor everything, but they've got, if you've ever seen some of these sites that they're doing, especially in, you know, foreign lands, they're massive locations with huge parts, you know, hardware on the ground. They just want to understand where's it all moving. Because they don't have time to have people looking at all that data all the time. Because you're, you know, just the human factor. And so if you can just actually parse out that and give them the solutions, which is here's the moment of change, here's the identification of something that's different, then they can actually take quick action.
Yeah. As you're describing that, I don't know, I'm thinking of any of the many movies I've watched where there are terrorists that come and, you know, attack a oil refinery or whatever. But I mean, you could create a boundary essentially and say, tell us if something enters that boundary. Right? And alert and
correct,
that kind of thing. So then it just becomes a function of how much of a time window in that case you could establish or whatever the case, right?
And that's why we go all the way back to, we talked about spatial data. The ability to fuse multiple sources of data together, can you imagine how effective that boundary is? Because they might be getting the geospatial from us, which is incredibly exquisite on that, that particular area. But if I could fuse other pieces of data to it as well, now I've got more real-time updates or near-time updates that can help people make in decision-making.
Well, I got a couple questions about that because it would strike me that your customers don't even know what you're capable of providing in many cases.
This is the complexity. Like when you're reading the opening, I'm like, oh my gosh, we do a lot. this is the challenge of the shift of the industry and really why we went from Maxar to Vantor. For example, we just launched something called the Tensor Globe. There's one. And if you really think about Tensor is actually the mathematics behind AI. And you've probably heard about Tensor from Google and so forth. But what the Tensor Globe is, it actually is these ground capabilities that we've been talking about. Like we have this one called Cortex, which is how do people actually manage multiple constellations nowadays? Think about all the assets that are going into orbit. You've got governments launching theirs. You've got commercial companies like myself. We have competitors that have launched stuff. But they don't have an ability to actually sync all that up, plan all that information. But we have, we've been doing it for 20 years. So we productize that.
Okay, this is kind of tongue in cheek a little bit, but it seems like you've got every flavor of what you, how you can package has like a cool name, right? So, do you need to name products in order to sell them to all these different, I mean, seriously, is that a strategy?
It is. We've rebranded a lot of things, yes. Some of it was just really to give identification of what those capabilities are. And the reason we built the Tensor Globe out was to really identify to our customers that these kind of capabilities, you know, bring you a different level of fusing data. I talked about Cortex.
Yeah.
that was one, exactly. Which is bringing the constellation together. Well, there's another one we call Forge. And that's actually, if you think about it, it's forging or fusing data together to make 3D, rapid maps, development.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool. I mean, what I'm hearing you say is that basically these different branded products, which are really services that complement one another, somehow you pull it together for customer benefit. But by naming them, I suppose my first question was like, how do customers even like grasp what you can do? And by naming these pockets of services, you're sort of helping them in that way.
That's exactly what the intent is. And it has been a journey, by the way, because you can imagine going out to customers who have been doing business with us for 20 years. And all of a sudden, we change the name of the company. Then we show up with a new product hierarchy, and we have to educate them. But what we have found is that's actually been the most important part of our rebranding, was it opened up the conversation of why. And when we sat back with them, we said, well, here's why we've done this, is everybody knows Maxar/Digital Globe, now Vantor, for the data it's been producing off orbit for 20 some odd years. They know for us about our 2D mapping capabilities. That's what every country's been doing forever. They've known about our 3D capabilities, but what they haven't probably appreciated was all the different applications that you can actually apply it to. And that's why we've been doing this extensive product rebranding to make sure people understand that there's a broader solution set that is becoming way more advanced now than it's ever been before, and we're applying all these new capabilities to it. And now they've got solutions that can actually really make them much more efficient as organizations.
I never thought of that way because I looked at your website and browsed and threw it on. I saw all these different names of, you know, they sound like code names for projects and stuff. Like, okay, but somehow, how do you help customers get their heads around what you can help them with? Mm-hmm. And what a struggle that must be.
It is, especially when you start talking about ground, you know, space to ground.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a big distance. I mean, you know, we start talking about imaging 650 kilometers up in the air, and then what can you actually really produce? But the advancements are happening so fast.
Yeah.
You know, in these capabilities that we do have to do a lot more differentiation for them. We have to do a lot more in regards to what is it they're trying to do from an outcome perspective and solve that problem backwards now. And I think that's the big difference.
Well, what would be so exciting too, I would think, is that customers don't always know what they could ask for. I mean, yeah.
Well, here's an interesting thing in the world that's going on. Everybody knows about the geopolitical challenges in the world. But the world probably, and most of your listeners would probably recognize the fact that the U.S. has been the supplier of information for a very long time in both the defense and intel perspective, even on the civilian side. Well, as the world is rearming, and I hate to say it that way, but that is the reality of what's going on in Europe and Asia-Pac right now, which is the world is going through rearmament. We've seen that based on the investments that they've made very politically. We've even seen that from, you know, the executive orders that have come from our new administration talking about the world needs to pay its bill in regards to building its own capabilities. Well, we've been walking into governments and they, because they've been dependent on certain sources of data, and now they're saying we have to build it ourselves. They literally don't know everything that they don't know, especially when we start talking about space to ground. And so this has given us an opportunity and some other companies in the industry an opportunity to reimagine how do you actually simplify this very complex topic by having these capabilities pre-form factor and built in software applications and be able to come to them and deliver them now and give them what we call like historical, you know, data concepts in a much, much easier fashion.
But when you do that, when you make it easier, do you dumb it down too? I mean, do you take away some of its elegant opportunities to, I mean, seriously, yeah.
I wish we could say we dumb it down. Unfortunately, it's still a complex industry. you know, I can get into the NIRS factor of our, you know, imagery, but the reality is there's still enough complexity in it about how do you actually bring it, you know, to the effective application of what the outcome is, but it should be dumbed down. This is an industry, if you think about geospatial information, or you think about any information that we've been kind of fusing together, the amount of human element to try and drive that has been tremendous. And guess what? Especially when you go outside the U.S. borders, the skill sets are just being developed. So it's actually easier for them to take much more automated approaches to how they actually solve these problems versus trying to build out human capabilities that just don't exist that much anymore.
Which is kind of cool because to the extent you can apply AI and other things to give them what they need without having to be experts the way your customers used to be.
Correct.
That's kind of cool.
And by the way, even the customers who used to be very manual, the speed. This is the other thing that's
happening. Talk about that, yeah.
I was going to say, the other thing that's happening is speed to decision-making now is so fast. If you think about an adversarial in the world, and let's talk about the defense world, people are, you know, they're trying to drive things that are harmful at a different rate and speed. So you have to apply, you know, advanced capabilities to help you in decision-making. And that is probably becoming one of the most important things we do. It's, you know, to make sure that we do keep people out of harm's way. We want to give people decision in their hands as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And so that's why you have to advance these models. You have to understand, like the we talked about earlier, about the modelers. They're really important because we have to understand all those different things on the ground now, but we have to put it into somebody's hands to be able to make decision on what's changing the world.
Well, you're talking a lot about change. I wonder about the pace of change. It just has to be astounding. So a couple questions like that. First of all, do you have to be a leader in the industry or you just can't compete? And the second question I have is, you've got to have a tremendous amount of resources dedicated on R&D. And these are people that aren't serving customers, right? So those are my two questions about pace.
Well, I think first off, I think we are the leader in the industry, which is a nice seat to sit in. But we also recognize you can't do this alone. So we've actually broadened our ecosystem to partner with companies who actually bring really good capabilities to us as well. And we've been announcing this year, like we did one with Saab, who a lot of people don't even realize. They think about the old Saab car.
Yeah,
right?
Those are kind of cool.
They were kind of cool. But Saab is actually, from the Nordics, one of the biggest defense manufacturers. And they're building solutions all the time. And so we recognize that they have capabilities that we don't have. And so we actually brought a partnership together to be able to deliver our capabilities onto their platforms as well. We're seeing that with our relationship with a company called Anduril. A lot of people don't know Anduril, but their founder was the guy who invented the Oculus AR glasses
for
Meta. And he's now built basically a defense company. And, we realized that they are bringing augmented reality for training. Think about this. We want our soldiers in the world to be able to train in a real-time environment without harm. And one of the best ways to do that is actually in augmented reality. And so here's, Anduril, they've created this wonderful capability, but guess what data they need? They need foundational data in 3D to understand how the world looks like. And that's what we provide. By bringing that together, we can actually deliver solutions to...
So they can rehearse a mission as if they're on the ground with actual 3D data.
Correct.
Wow, that's cool.
That's a shift.
Then you'll be selling it to the gaming companies.
Well, actually, the funny part you say that is a lot of these solutions are actually coming out of the gaming companies.
Really?
We're seeing that on a worldwide level. Because of the fact that they've been delivering these kind of real-time experiences to the gamers, you're actually applying that. Now, what we have to apply is reality to it. And I think that that's what Vantor really does is, because we are bringing that data down to what is real, this isn't just a game anymore. This is real context.
Wow. All right. And real context is a great segue to a whole chunk I want to dive into with you, which is to do with how you control the kind of data that you want to capture and deliver. For example, how you apply values to that? Because somebody's going to say, hey, model this rainforest without any trees and as farmland, right? Or whatever. And you have to decide, is this going to be our customer? Are we going to do this? What role do values play in the work that you do?
Well, I think, first off, values are everything what you do, because you can imagine the industry, what we serve and the governments that we serve. So we do think of ourselves as a high integrity company. I just want to state that now. We deal with the nations that we believe are the right nations to deal with in the right companies.
But even in that world, people have, one person's farmland is another person's rainforest.
Correct.
So values isn't black and white.
No.
So, back to the question.
Well, first off, we are a business. Some of the values we're going to look at is, what are the pieces that are going to actually drive the most inherent value for our business? But there are things that people will ask us to do. And we're like, no, that's just not something we want to do. Like, take deforestation. We have a great relationship with the Amazon Fund, which actually protects natives in the Amazon, but also monitors deforestation. But a lot of people, they realize that about Amazon. What they also don't realize is the Amazon River is actually one of the biggest targets for illegal mining.
So you have
these barges that come up and they actually ruin the ecosystem in it. So we actually choose to be on the side of the Amazon conservation than we are going to be on the other side, which is, for the pro-development side, because those are the decisions. And from an economics perspective, being on the other side isn't worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you say that?
Not going to make enough money to hurt your brand.
Yeah.
But the other thing too is it's not just about the brand. It's also, we do a lot of things in regards to first responders and capabilities. We'd rather be on the side of understanding things like human trafficking. Some people say, how do you use geospatial data in human trafficking? We'd be surprised. Human traffickers have patterns, and people movement is a pattern-based thing. And so you can actually pick up on things like human trafficking. Well, we'd rather be on the side of working with governments on stopping human trafficking, or work with the international community to stop drug trade, or work on things in regards to illegal mining and all these other different things. Because one, I think it's better for humanity, and that's always a good cause to be in. I think that's what's so fascinating about what we do is we actually do pick or do help humanity on a daily basis. Then be on the side of, hey, we can make an extra dollar in. Give somebody information that can actually hurt humanity.
Yeah, because that was what my follow-on question was going to be. You're kind of already gone there, which is in today's world, employees feel empowered to help their companies make decisions about customers and things like that. It sounds like that's not such a big issue in your case.
No, I think our employee base is absolutely excited about what we do. And we are, if you look at our number one value in our company, it's actually mission driven. But we're actually driven on the right missions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that that's, you know, we actually love our employee input and the values around our employees. And I think that this is something that we don't hesitate on to do.
Cool.
And, you know, we always look out the right things to do for people. And, you know, it's one of the things is even, you know, certain things that you can take imagery on the ground. And you have to be sensible about, you know, things that you see and share.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned your employees and your Colorado-based company, which is awesome, right? You're smiling about that. What role does that play for you? And what do your employees think about that?
Our roots are here, man. It's we're in Westminster, Colorado. We've been here since the inception of Digital Globe. This is a community that has some of the best aerospace engineering and some of the best minds around what we do. And we're very fortunate that we, you know, in this area we do it. But, you know, we're proud to be in the front range, and we're proud about what we how we continue to build out. And of course, we've got facilities up and down, you know, the corridor here, and and we're going to continue to focus on our development here because this is our home.
Great. Couple more. Thinking about progress that you've made. And your background isn't really it's in software, but it's not in this kind of world.
No.
So, yeah, I mean, how hard a jump was that, though, to go from things like VMware and Salesforce to something like this?
Great question, because when they were recruiting me, I was like, wow.
This is part of the job interview. It's just extended a little later. Yeah.
when you think about data, the attributes of data really are common no matter if you're like one of my companies I ran prior to this was really around like network and traffic confusion of network capabilities. That was data. And what we're inspecting in that data is no similar to this, but we're inspecting this data. The difference between this data and that data is this one happens to be produced 650 kilometers above the ground. I'm not by any means. I've got some of the best minds in the industry talking about optical capabilities and the physics of what it takes to take imagery from, orbit and how to fly satellites. There are more experts in this in my company than I will ever learn. But the other thing I'm actually really proud of is the fact that I've had tremendous mentors from inside the company who have taught me more about this industry than I can shake a stick at. And I am super proud of them because of the fact that they, that has helped us carry the background that I've had, which is data and software-based products, fuse it to some of the capabilities this company's been able to bring it to. And that is why I think over the last years, we're now releasing these capabilities, which is just expanding the market share.
Yeah. That's interesting to use the word mentors. These are people that report to you?
Report within my organization. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's cool. You don't hear a lot of CEOs talking about people who report to them as mentors. Usually they're people outside.
Yeah. Well, I think I think there are mentors everywhere. Absolutely. I've been very fortunate in my career that I've had very senior leaders and CEOs that have mentored me or given me opportunities and let me fail. And I always say that too, because part of your biggest growth is not what you succeed. It's actually when you fail.
For sure.
And, but I think it's also two way inside of companies. I mentor people, and I think that everybody has an opportunity to mentor everybody. And I do find that there are some incredibly bright people. And if you don't sit down and talk to them and learn from them, you can't grow yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that I do see that mentoring is kind of an all over the place.
Yeah, that's cool. Last question, because you kind of took me there already, but I noticed you follow a lot of impressive people and successful people on LinkedIn. And so who are you? Who's one of your favorites?
I've got a few.
Yeah. Okay. Who are they?
You know, it's, I work for a very special person, Marc Benioff, what he's done with Salesforce. I think that, in dealing with how he's continued to evolve the business and has grown. I had a colleague who I've known for a very long time, who I've watched her grow in her career and take risks. And that's Julie Sweet from Accenture. We actually grew up together. And I look at her and I'm like, I see her story about how she, went through education and then, came from the legal industry and has taken on not only just the most powerful position in consulting, but actually probably one of the most powerful women in industry. And just watching how she's leading people and the way that she communicates is always very impressive. Mm-hmm. But I've been very fortunate. I mean, one of the other people he's now doing investment was growing up underneath John Chambers at Cisco early in my career. Mm-hmm. he brought just this absolute focus in regards to your core business and then expanding it, that core business, but always to serve, you know, your overall vision as a company. And so I've been very, very fortunate, one, to be able to work around some of these people, but also to kind of continue to watch them, you know, and see how they continue to lead.
Yeah, that's those are three great examples. And what's so interesting is that you've worked with all of them. Most of us, you know, follow people and just fantasize about meeting them one day. So that must feel different.
It is different, but there are people that I look from afar and I go, well, they're very fascinating. I mean, if you're in our industry and you don't look at what Elon Musk has done, you know, Elon's Elon. You know, they're there. And then there's one other person that's always been fascinating to me is Tomo Bravo. Orlando Bravo from a private equity firm, Tomo Bravo. He talks a lot about the values of mentors. And so I always, you know, when he's out podcasting or he's out, you know, on the street, he's one I always listen to too, because he talks about the same thing, which is the importance of growing through failure and stuff. And he's an incredibly successful person. And I now work for a different private equity firm, Advent, who also has some people in that company that are really impressive in regards to how they're focused on business. So it's how do you just bring all those pieces together from all those different and learn from them? I think we always have to be humble enough that there are better ideas out there. There are smart people out there, and we can learn from them all.
We can, you know, on a good day, that idea will be mine, but I don't have that many good days. So anyway, it's been a great conversation. So how do you feel if we wrap up?
I thank you very much, Dave, for having me today. This has been one, a lot of fun, but second, I hopefully, you know, your listeners get a little piece of what we're doing over there at Vantor.
Oh yeah. Guys, go to Vantor.com and you'll see all the cool words we talked about. Now you'll know what they mean, and you'll have heard from Dan directly. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on ProCode 360. Yes, you have been listening to my conversation with Dan Smoot, CEO of Vantor. And it was a great conversation. I look forward to having another one down the road.
Thank you.
Listeners, glad you're here on ProCode 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCode 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review, if you follow me, it'd be great. A quick shout out to Tommy Maxted over in the booth next door of Vantor. He coordinated all this in this episode. Also, thanks again to our show sponsors, Via Technologies and Denver Ventures. That's the show, Live, Work, Love, Colorado.